And it's my great pleasure to introduce Leia Rieckert-Guinness. I never know how to pronounce your the second part of your surname. And Leia actually works on a project jointly between the laboratories of Raphaël Margaron at the Institut Curie and Christophe Ginestier, who is in Marseille. And she will be telling us about some very recent work, but with an introduction about the state of mammary stem cells and the links to the process of X chromosome inactivation, which is, of course, an epigenetic process. So, Leia, it's really a pleasure to have you and to hear you.
Thank you.
We look forward.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I think the outline of speakers is very impressive, so I have to say I'm a bit intimidated, but I will do my best. So, as Evie said, I am a postdoc between the labs of Raphaël and Edith, and today I will try to convince you that EXIST is actually important for the homeostasis of the mammary epithelium. And as Edith also remarked, this project has been developed in collaboration with the lab of Emmanuel Charles Geoffrey and Christophe Ginestier in Marseille, who are the true experts in breast cancer stem cells. So allow me to first state the obvious that men and women are different, and some people say that's because they come from different planets, but probably the most likely explanation is that they have different epigenetic content. So as you know, women have two X chromosomes, while men have only one, and then they have a small chromosome that is referred to as Y chromosome. So to compensate for this difference in genetic dosage, I'm afraid the computer is dying. Sorry. Well, maybe I can keep explaining and I will show you then the slide. in order to compensate for this difference in genetic content, mammals have developed an epigenetic mechanism that we call X chromosome inactivation. And we say it's epigenetic because it does not involve the modification of the sequence of DNA, but the modification of all the proteins that are wrapped around the DNA. And this process starts very early on during embryogenesis and consists on the random upregulation of an RNA molecule that is referred to as EXIST. And this RNA molecule is upregulated from one of the two X chromosomes in female cells randomly. And it will code the X chromosome in cis, and it will recruit a collection of chromatin remodelers and modifiers that will impose an heterochromatin silent domain. So at the end of this process of X chromosome inactivation, we have a silent chromosome that is very compact, and it can be seen under the microscope as this very compact heterochromatic structure that was long ago identified as the bar body. Okay, so we believe that this X chromosome activation is very stable, so it established very early on during embryogenesis, and it's maintained throughout cell divisions. So in the adult organism, all cells will have an inactivated X chromosome, except, of course, for the germinal cells. However, there are two scenarios where the maintenance of the inactive X chromosome is impaired, and these scenarios include breast cancer, for instance, and human-induced pluripotent stem cells. Okay, so I will just revisit what I said, because it's better if you see the visuals, it will help you understand. So as I was mentioning, the X chromosome inactivation is established very early on during embryogenesis, and it involves the upregulation of EXIST from one of the two X chromosomes in a random fashion in female cells. And this... Okay, it's a... I feel like I'm being challenged. Yeah. Well, at least you will know this one by heart. So we have regularized axes. These axes recruits either directly or indirectly lots of chromatin remodelers and modifiers that catalyze the incorporation of all these epigenetic modifications, and this results in the creation of a silent heterochromatic domain that can be seen under a microscope and is referred to as the bar body. And very importantly, even though this is a process that affects the whole chromosome, and actually most of the chromosome will end up being transcriptionally silent, there are a few genes here that escape inactivation, and they are managed to be transcribed from the inactive X chromosome, often not at the same extent as the same alleles on the active X chromosome, but still, it's quite a remarkable proportion of the genes on the X chromosome. This is in humans, not so much in mouse. The escape is much less. But I think this is a very interesting point, because this escape from the inactive X chromosome is actually quite variable between individuals. It's variable between cell types, between individuals, so it can contribute to the phenotypic variability between individuals and explain phenomena like the differences in disease susceptibility between women and men. So, as I mentioned before, the inactivation of the X chromosome is quite stable and it's propagated throughout cell divisions, but there are scenarios where this inactivation is compromised. And we find this scenario in breast cancer and also in human-induced pluripotent stem cells. And when I say that the inactivation is compromised, what I'm referring to is this inactive X chromosome that we are calling now eroded. And this eroded X chromosome presents low levels of XEAST, epigenetic erosion, meaning that it loses some of these histone modifications that are associated with transcriptional repression. There are also events of transcriptional reactivation and even changes in gene dosage. So in this scenario, what we are interested in understanding is what are the underlying mechanisms that are responsible for this loss of the maintenance of the inactive X chromosome. Could it be exist? And you may think, well, this is obvious, an obvious question, right? I mean, exist is responsible for the initiation of the X chromosome inactivation, but actually it's not so obvious, because for a long time it was thought that exist is crucial for the establishment of X chromosome inactivation, but it's dispensable once the inactivation is established. And maybe one of the most critical questions is to understand whether the changes in gene dosage that arise from an unstable inactive X have any phenotypic impact on the cells. And we have several evidence, actually, that suggest that this is the case. As I mentioned, changes in X dosages are frequent in breast tumors, and in particularly in those that are very aggressive. And these changes come from an eroded X chromosome in some cases, but also from big aneuploidies that involve the loss of the inactive X chromosome and the amplification of the active X. So it seems that in tumors, these changes in X-linked gene dosage are favored and may provide some selective advantage to the tumor. And also, as I mentioned, the inactive X chromosome is frequently eroded in human-induced pluripotent stem cells. And in those cells that present an eroded inactive X, when they are challenged to differentiate, they don't differentiate properly. So there is a correlation between a failure to maintain the inactivation of the X chromosome and differentiation, at least in this setting. And also, we know that when X-EAST is depleted in the hematopoietic compartment of the mouse, this leads to lymphoproliferative disorders, in some cases even to very aggressive tumors. So we are interested in particular in understanding what are the effects of losing the inactivation of the X chromosome in the mammary epithelium, because as I mentioned, the there is very often a defective maintenance of the inactive X chromosome in breast tumors. But let me remind you of what the mammary epithelium looks like. It's actually like a branching tree of ducts and ductules. And if we zoom in, we realize that there are two main epithelial compartments. One luminal compartment that is lining the lumen of the duct, and then a basal compartment that actually contains cells that have different identities. So it contains the myoepithelial cells that will help the duct contract, but it also contains potentially cells with stem cell properties. And this comes from experiments of tissue disaggregation, cell sorting based on cell surface markers, and study of the differentiation capacity. So this knowledge comes from experiments that subject the tissue to mechanical stress. But still, this is as far as we can go with human tissue. But unfortunately, for ethical reasons, we cannot genetically modify humans. So we have to settle down with using some cell lines to study this epithelium. And we mainly use two cell lines, HMLE and HME. They are originated from primary cells through different strategies. And very, very roughly, they recapitulate the cellular hierarchy that we find in the normal epithelium. So in HMLE, for instance, we have a population of stem cells that will give rise to the two lineages, the luminal and the basal, through lineage-restricted progenitors. And then we have HME that also have like a bit of a hierarchical structure in culture, but mostly give rise to the luminal compartment. And it's in these cells where we alter the expression of XYST. And we do so by knocking it out. And what you see here is a staining for XYST. And usually in wild-type cells, we see this really nice cloud of XYST that is covering the inactive X chromosome. But in cells where we have knocked it out, you see that this cloud has disappeared. And one of the most striking initial observations was that when we assess the differentiation capacity of this population of mammary stem cells by sorting them in a 96-well plate, one cell per well, and then we evaluated differentiation potential, we realized that in wild-type cells, the stem cell population would give rise to cells of either lineage. However, when we interfere with XYST expression, this differentiation pathway is impaired, and the cells tend to differentiate towards the basal lineage and give rise to myoepithelial cells. And this is quite striking because for a long time it was thought that depleting XYST in adult tissues had no effect. And there are some experiments that actually suggest that this is the truth for most tissues, but there are some tissues that seem to be susceptible to the loss of XYST. One of them is the mouse hematopoietic compartment, and the other one seems to be the breast epithelium, at least in the human setting. And this was for the HMLE, but HME, which is the older cell line, allows us to do some more fancier experiments, including the growth of breast organoids. And when we cultured these organoids from this cell line, what we see is different types of structure. We have low branching structures and then high branching, bigger structures that actually arise from different cell types. So the low branching, smaller structures are thought to arise from luminal progenitors, while the bigger and more complex structures would arise from cells that have a higher potency. And when we interfere with XYST expression, here signified as SGXYST, what we get are bigger, more complex organoids, which reflects a higher presence of mammary stem cells in the cellular population. And the same when we inject these cells into the mammary fat pads of the mouse, where we have previously cleared the mammary epithelium, we see that X cells interfered for XYST have a higher repopulation capacity, which again reflects the higher presence of cells with a stem cell potential. But this phenotype is quite striking, so of course we have to go back to the basics of the epigenetics and try to understand what happens to the inactive X chromosome when we interfere with X-GIST expression. And what we can do to start with is to profile all these epigenetic modifications that result from the upregulation of X-GIST on the inactive X chromosome. And we can do so using a technique that is called cut-and-run-seq that allows us to profile all these histone modifications in a genome-wide manner. And if we summarize these profiles around the genes on the inactive X chromosome, we can see that, for instance, for histone modifications that are associated with transcriptional repression, the loss of X-GIST results in a depletion on these marks around the genes. So in the absence of X-GIST, the chromatin remodeling complexes that catalyze the incorporation of these histone modifications are no longer recruited to the inactive X chromosome, and therefore we see depletion for these marks. So there is an epigenetic erosion. And concomitantly to this, when we profile the histone modifications that are associated with transcriptional activation, in this case, acetyl-K27 in two different genomic locations around the genes on the X chromosome, but also on the enhancers on the X chromosome, we see that knockout cells here, highlighted in red, have higher levels of acetyl-K27 than the wild-type ones that are highlighted in green. And this is even more pronounced when we are looking at enhancers. So there is epigenetic erosion and also signs of transcriptional activation based on the profile of acetyl-K27. But we really want to go into detail and try to figure out what are the genes that may undergo this transcriptional reactivation on the inactive X chromosome when we remove X-GIST, and maybe these are the genes that are involved in the phenotype of differentiation that we see in our cells. So in order to do so, we take advantage of the heterozygous SNPs, so single nucleotide positions that allow us to distinguish between the active X chromosome and the inactive X chromosome. And this is a bit of a complex graph, but I will try to explain because I want you to just to capture the general trends. This is a heat map that is representing the allelic ratios for all the genes for which we have allelic information measured with different techniques. The way measuring histone modifications and also RNA-seq data. So here you see that each panel goes from blue to red. Blue panels signify that the gene is biallelically expressed, meaning it's expressed from the active X chromosome and the inactive X. And there is here a small group of genes that is expressed from both active and inactive X chromosome. This is expected. As I mentioned in the beginning, there are some genes on the inactive X chromosome that are capable of escaping inactivation, and they do so constitutively. And they do not change when we inactivate X-GIST. If anything, they are a bit upregulated from the inactive X chromosome. Then there is a group of genes that remains monoallelically expressed, meaning exclusively expressed from the active X, and they don't change when we deplete X-GIST. And the heat map is not representing this properly, but actually this is the majority of genes on the X chromosome. And then we have a small group of genes here in the middle that are reactivated. So they go from red to blue. And this is according to different measurements. And it's a small set of genes. But one of the most interesting things about these genes is that they actually are not randomly distributed along the X chromosome. Here we see them in green. And they seem to colocalize with genes that always escape the inactive X chromosome. And this is quite interesting because it reflects the fact that they may be in an epigenetic environment that is permissive for transcriptional activity. And actually, if now you go back to the heat map and you look at the reds here for the reactivation genes, they are not as strong as the reds here. So this means that they are already capable a little bit of escaping silencing from the inactive X chromosome. And when we remove Xist, their expression goes even higher. And actually, when we have profiled different keystone modifications, we realize that these genes actually fall in a characteristic epigenetic environment that actually is characterized by marks that are deposited by a group of chromatin remodelers called polycomb group proteins, and they depend on PRC1 more specifically for their silencing in a wild type setting. So they are not randomly distributed, they colocalize with genes that are already capable of escaping X chromosome inactivation, and they are in a characteristic epigenetic environment. But what we are most interested in understanding is whether any of these genes that are transcriptionally reactivated, and actually we have proved, but I'm not showing you here, that this transcriptional reactivation results in higher RNA levels and higher protein levels for these genes measured by Western blot, RNA fish, etc. Are any of these genes responsible for the phenotype of the mammary epithelial cells? So to assess this, we can take advantage of a flavor of the CRISPR technology that is called dead-Cas9 CRAB, that consists on fusing the dead-Cas9 that is not catalytically active with a CRAB domain that will allow us to silence each of these genes individually. And we do so in the context of Xist silencing. So as you remember, this is the cellular hierarchy of the HMLE. When we interfere with Xist expression, the differentiation towards the luminal compartment is impaired. But if at the same time we silence MET14, which is one of the genes that we tested for their effect on the cellular homeostasis, the differentiation towards the luminal compartment is restored. Now, we did this for all these genes, of course. We only saw an effect with MET14 and RBP7, but I will show you mostly the effects on MET14 because this is the most interesting candidate for us. And these are the other assays that corroborate that actually interfering with MET14 expression together with Xist expression reverts the differentiation phenotype that we were seeing in our cells. So upon depletion of Xist, we got bigger organoids and more complex, but when we deplete MET14 at the same time, the size of the organoids goes back to levels that are comparable to our wild-type cells. And also interfering with MET14 expression reduces the repopulation capacity of Xist silenced cells. So we have a reversal of a phenotype measured in different manners in different cell lines when we interfere with MET14 together with Xist. But we can do the reverse. So far we were silencing them in the context of an Xist silencing, but we can also try to upregulate them individually to see if upregulation of each of them is sufficient to induce this differentiation phenotype. And for that, we use another flavor of CRISPR. This time is dead-Cas9 fused to the VPR module. And here, if we upregulate, for instance, MET14, we also see an effective differentiation towards the luminal compartment. So when we silence, we revert the phenotype. When we upregulate MET14 by itself, we see a recapitulation of the Xist related differentiation phenotype. And why are we so excited about MET14? So MET14 is one of the many subunits of a big protein complex that is called mediator. And mediator, I'm going to say something a bit redundant, mediates the communication between some gene regulatory elements called enhancers and the promoters. And actually, MET14 is a very critical subunit of this complex. It's both a structural subunit because, as you can see, it's actually very big and it connects the different modules of the mediator complex. And it's also a very important functional subunit for mediator because it allows the conformational changes that will allow for mediator to contact RNA pol 2 that will be sitting in the promoter. And we know that mediator is important for the maintenance of this stem cell compartment, and this has been measured in embryonic stem cells and also adult stem cells. So we have a regulation of a subunit of mediator that we know it's critical for the maintenance of the transcriptional program of stem cells. And just as a side note, we know that that global enhancer activation is quite common in cancer. So we, in addition to try to understand if there was any effect on MET14 upon Xis loss, we also explored where were the effects on other subunits of the complex, because it's so big that we need to understand if there is any effect on the complex itself. And actually, measuring by Western blot, we see a regulation of different subunits of mediator in Xis knockout cells, and these subunits belong to different modules of mediator. So we have transcriptional upregulation of MET14 that results from reactivation from the inactive exosome, and upregulation at the protein level of different mediator subunits. And this upregulation, we believe it's probably due to stabilization of the complex more than to transcriptional upregulation of the other subunits of mediator. And so we have higher levels of mediator, but we want to understand if this has any effect on transcriptional regulation. So we can have a look at the levels of activation of enhancers, which are the genomic elements that are targeted by mediator. And to do so, we can profile two histomodifications, acetyl-K27 and monomethyl-K4. But of these two, acetyl-K27 is actually the histomodification that better reflects the level of transcriptional activation of the enhancers. And what you can see is that in the exosome, it's very clear that there is some higher activation of enhancers, but also there is a difference in autosome in terms of enrichment of acetyl-K27 on enhancer elements. And this you can see here when I look at the red line that signifies the knockout cells versus the green lines that signify the wild-type cells. But we can also go into more detail by separating enhancers between those that characterize mammary stem cells and those that characterize mature liminal cells. And as you can see, the bigger effect is on enhancers that are driving the gene expression program of mammary stem cells. So what we think is happening is that in a normal scenario in mammary stem cells, there is a competition between the mammary stem cell program and the mature luminal program. However, the competition is won, of course, by the mammary stem cell program. And then during differentiation, the mature luminal program takes over. However, in the Xis knockout setting, there is a higher stabilization of the mammary stem cell program. And this leads to a higher inhibition of the mature luminal program, so differentiation towards the luminal lineage is more difficult. It is feasible, but it's more challenging because the transcriptional program of mammary stem cells is more stable thanks to the higher levels of MET14 and also higher levels of mediator that result in higher activation of the enhancers associated to the transcriptional program of mammary stem cells. So far I've shown you that when we remove Xis, there are differentiation defects and there is partial transcriptional reactivation that results in changes in gene dosage. And also I mentioned in the beginning that changes in X dosage seem to be favored in aggressive breast tumors. So the obvious question is whether this actually impacts tumorigenesis, especially because we know that But breast cancer is a very heterogeneous disease, and that this heterogeneity results partially from different cells of origin. So the more aggressive tumors seem to originate from a cell that has higher potency and that is capable of giving rise to the two lineages in the mammary epithelium. So in order to assess what was the effect of removing Xis on oncogenesis, we transformed HMLE with a mutant form of HRAS This gives rise to an oncogenic cell line that we refer to as HMLE-R. And we inoculate these cells into the mouse, and then we evaluate their oncogenic potential. And what we see first is that while wild-type cells that express the mutant HRAS have a really high proportion of what is called cancer stem cells, so a cell that is capable of originating a tumor, this population is even higher in the cells where we have removed exist. And actually, the mice that are injected with knockout cells, they develop tumors faster and they die faster than those injected with wild-type cells, excuse me. And this is even more remarkable when we inject very, very few cells. So when we inject 10 wild-type cells, very often we don't get any tumor. But when we do the same for the knockout cells, we often do tumors, even when we are injecting just 10 cells or even one cell. So this reflects the much higher abundance of cancer stem cells in the population where we have knocked out exist. So let me just end up by summarizing what I have shown you. I hope I have convinced you that removing exist, even though unexpectedly, it interferes with cellular homeostasis, and that importantly, this can have an impact on the oncogenic potential of the cells. That in the absence of exist, even though it was thought to be dispensable for the maintenance of the inactivation of the X chromosome, there are some events of transcriptional reactivation that lead to changes in gene dosage. And that we have established a mechanistic link between the reactivation of MET14 and higher activity of mediator that is driving stabilization of the transcriptional program of mammary stem cells, and that results in impaired differentiation towards the luminal compartment. And I would just like to end by thanking everyone in the teams of Rafael and Edith, and of course our collaborators. And I'll just finish with a nice picture of MET1 and the nucleus. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer.